Oh, hello. It is Saturday, July 27th, 2013. We are broadcasting live from Santa Cruz on the central coast of California. This is KUSP Public Radio 88.9 and KUSP.org, and it's time now for Geek Speak.
We're through being cool. We're through being cool. Eliminate the minis and the twit.
Welcome to Geek Speak. Bridging the gaps, between geeks and the rest of humanity. Please keep in mind that the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. I'm Bonnie Jean Primsch. I'm filling in for your host, Lyle Troxell, today. And with me in the studio is Lindsay Lonnie, a systems analyst, support engineer, and software engineer. Hello.
Good morning, Bonnie.
Oh, do I have you on the wrong mic? I do.
Oh, hi.
There you are.
Good morning, Bonnie.
So, ladies and gentlemen, this may be, in fact, the first time that Geek Speak is hosted exclusively by ladies.
Woohoo!
I'm very excited about that.
Girl Geek Speak.
Yeah, man. And we've got things to talk about. There's plenty been going on in the last week. First up, Prism has been a topic of much interest here at Geek Speak HQ, and it looks like it's not going away anytime soon.
Yeah, sad day for me Wednesday. There was a vote in the... Well, Representative Justin Amash, a Michigan Republican, and John Conyers, a Michigan Democrat, introduced an amendment to the defense spending bill to restrict Section 215 Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court orders. That's a mouthful. Usually we would just say FISC. Basically, they want to restrict the surveillance to records pertaining to people under investigation. Mm-hmm. So it's not just a wide blanket surveillance of anyone they want.
Yeah.
One of the things is that it wouldn't stop the surveillance necessarily. It would just provide more oversight of the NSA by the FISC.
Okay.
So at least we would have records of who was being surveilled and all that kinds of stuff.
But that means bigger government, right?
Yes. Bigger, better, faster, stronger. Oh, wait, right. No.
Oh, wait, it's something else.
Right.
Yeah. So how'd that go over? Not well.
Yeah. So it was defeated by a margin of 12 votes in the House of Representatives. 12 votes.
So close.
I read somewhere that there were 12 people missing from that vote that day, and I'd have to confirm
Ooh.
That. I only found it on one page mentioning that.
Get on it, Tin Hats.
Yeah, exactly. They need to figure that out for us.
Well, and we'll include at the GeekSpeak website at geekspeak.org a link to who voted which way, just so we know what's going on there.
Right. I was a little disappointed about my representative. I was like, really voted for, I'm gonna have to give them a call and say, let's talk about this.
Do you have a few minutes?
What they're saying is that, votes for the amendment represented a lawmaker's reflection of public opinion. There's been some outcry about it, but that lawmakers who voted against it were kind of covering themselves in a way, because if there is a terrorist attack or, something that happens,
they don't want to be the guy or the person who said, we didn't need it.
Right. We could have prevented this if we'd only had phone records. My bad. They're covering themselves in that way.
Yeah.
So I can see why, as a lawmaker, they might have wanted to be conservative, but you're also representing your people. So that's, yeah.
That whole thing about how a lawmaker wants to represent themselves more than the people they represent, that's kind of a running thing.
Yeah.
I've noticed.
Yes.
In politics lately.
Exactly.
It's been kind of a I think that's what they call the gridlock.
Yep.
All right. Well, it took me a little while to wake up this morning. I usually wake up a little later than I want to these days, and you've been doing some research into mobile apps that might make that go a little bit easier for me.
Yeah, exactly. And I had heard about this because a friend of mine told me that she had done a sleep study and found out she had sleep apnea. And they had recommended to her that there's these apps that do tracking for this. So what you can do is install an app on your phone, and it uses the phone's accelerometer. You put the phone next to you, like on your pillow, under your pillow, on your bed somewhere. Mm-hmm. And then during the night, as you move, it tracks how you move. So if you're in a really deep sleep, you're less likely to do moving. So the natural sleep cycle is usually about 90 minutes with REM at like 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. That's an average. Everybody's different. And so the goal of this, though, you don't need this necessarily if you just have sleep issues. It can help anybody. So you set a margin of time, like 30 minutes, say, and what time you want to wake up. Mm-hmm. And it will detect how deep you are in sleep and how light you are, and try to wake you during a time when you are in a lighter sleep mode. So you know how sometimes you wake up and you just feel really out of it and groggy and that where am I kind of feeling? Mm-hmm. Usually that's because your alarm is waking you up in the middle of a deep sleep cycle.
Right at the good part of the dream.
Exactly.
Dang.
So the goal is to wake you when you're not in a deep sleep cycle, so you feel better when you wake up and less
groggy. That's nice. Now, I wonder if you could set it to specifically waking you up during a deeper sleep so you can better remember your dreams, for instance.
You probably can. I haven't tested that out, but I wouldn't doubt it for people that are really into, you know, dream studies and sleep studies and things like that.
Yeah. You mentioned kind of a neat thing about just how it wakes people up that might be handy for people who sleep with others.
Right. Well, not only can you use just your phone for things like this, but you can get bracelets that use Bluetooth to talk to your phone. And some of the bracelets that you can buy that incorporate with these apps have a vibrate mode. So when the alarm goes off, it just vibrates on your wrist and doesn't wake up your partner. And you know,
that's cool right there. So cool.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there's all sorts of fun stuff that different apps do. There's stuff like Azumio Sleep Time, which is cross-platform. And then there's Android. The one that I've been trying out is, Sleep as Android. And that one has good reviews on the Play Store. But it has lullabies. So you can set different lullabies to put you to sleep and, you know, set timers for when you want them to turn off. It's sort of like having a noise machine.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you have a sleep recorder. Like, at night, if your partner is snoring and it's waking you up, you can record their snoring.
Honey,
and play
it really
it back
was you?
Yes, exactly. I have evidence it was you. And so that's been a popular use this is pointing the finger at who's waking up and disturbing your sleep cycle.
That was a popular topic in my family growing up because Dad was an outrageous snorer, but at some point Mom also became a snorer and was with great glee that Dad was able to point out that, nope, that one was you.
Excellent.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
So there, speaking of dongles and things that help you do things mobily, Google came out with something recently that just went like gangbusters.
Yeah. One of the articles that I found is talking about Chromecast and how it's Google's miracle device. So they've been trying to get into the living room, you know, home theater space with Google TV and different stuff, and nothing has really taken off. Chromecast came out and they started selling them online only at the Google Store, Amazon, and I think Best Buy, and they sold out. And it's like a little, it looks like a USB dongle, but it's an HDMI dongle.
Oh, okay.
So you plug it into your TV, you install an app on your laptop or whatever device you want, your phone, and any content that you could theoretically play through a Chrome browser, you can play on your television.
Okay.
So a lot of people are finding this really great and really fun, and the price is right. They priced it at $34, so it's affordable. But
are there that many people using Chrome that it would be?
You know, and it may theoretically be things that you can play in a browser and not just necessarily Chrome. It uses a form of Chrome.
But it's Google content, basically.
Right. And so the unique thing about it is that it's pulling content from the cloud. So what some people are experiencing when they try to play content from, say, their phone on their TV using other devices that are somewhat similar is a lot of delay on their device. So then other apps on their device are having trouble working because it's working so hard to stream the content, like HD video content to your television.
So by having things stream directly from the cloud as opposed to your device itself, that speeds things up and frees up memory for other things that your device wants to do?
Yeah, theoretically, it allows your device to do other things. But some of the reviews that I've read have said if you don't have a fast internet connection or a good Wi-Fi router, that it's not going to work well for you.
Right.
And, you know, I know enough people that do have good internet connections because I know geeky people, you know, that are all about it, that they could maybe use this and enjoy it. But I just don't know how relevant it is for the regular general market. And for me personally, I don't really see what the big deal is. And maybe somebody can call in later and let us know how they're using it. Because I'm interested in hearing how, like, Joe Public is using it.
Right.
Versus the geek who's like, oh, this is a great, cheap new gadget and I want to try it out. And I, you know, I've tried to envision scenarios of where this would be useful to me, and I can't personally think of anything.
You're too inside.
Yeah. You know, I don't understand what the big deal is, and I want somebody to explain that to me. Because for me, the thing that's a big deal is other types of similar devices, like what I'm trying to redo my home theater and do it affordably and keep my old components, and it's been a real challenge. But one of the things I found is that you can get an HD transmitter and receiver that's wireless, but then you're using your home Wi-Fi and beaming directly from your device to your TV, where in my case it's actually a projector that I'm beaming to. And those are great because you get rid of your cables, because with a projector I've got that in the back of the room and all my other stuff in the front of the room, so I've got a Blu-ray player. And you know, if I want to get rid of the cable, I can use this transmitter and receiver, plug it into the back of my Blu-ray and my projector. They can talk to each other without running a cable across the room, which I think is super cool. Mm-hmm. But those things are expensive. So, you know, not outrageously expensive, but expensive enough that I'm like, meh, you know, I'm okay with running a cable across my room.
So is it the price point of this dongle that has people so excited?
That's what I'm wondering. I think so, because it's like, you know, you go out to eat and you're already paying that much or whatever. So, you know, it's kind of cool. And I'm wondering, like, the things I'm envisioning for it is something like, you know, you've got a bunch of kids at a slumber party and they've all got these YouTube videos on their phones that they want to show each other. Mm-hmm. And so everyone's hooking up to this, you know, this Chromecast dongle. Oh, this video is so funny, you have to see it, you know, and they play their videos for each other off of their phones or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Or if everyone has these, then you can go to your friend's house and you can force them to watch your family vacation photos, you know. So I can see it for stuff like that, where it's the new version of the projector that you're like, hey,
just,
I've got
just be aware of who you're telling you have one of these things.
Exactly. You know, because they're like, oh, you have that? I can show you my...
Here are my slides.
Right. Exactly.
So does that implies... Because I know sometimes with things like, oh, I've got my iPad mini or my iPod mini, and it's lovely, and it works with my iTunes on my computer, but I can't hook it up to someone else's iTunes and swap music back and forth. So is it freed up from that kind of proprietary limit?
You know, according to what I can tell, you can't use iTunes with it because it is cloud-based.
I don't mean iTunes specifically, but for instance, in the slumber party scenario, will it be able to listen to home devices but also visiting devices?
I think anything that you can run a Chrome browser on and install the app for it, that you can use that device.
So it doesn't have to hook up to your particular Chrome account or
And I believe
your
they have
account.
To give you their Wi-Fi password or something like that.
Okay.
Or, you
There's
know, have to log into
like
their,
that, right?
You know, to log into their Wi-Fi so that you can use it. But yeah, it's pretty cross. And so that's the big thing about it, is you can use any device, and anyone can use any Chromecast as long as you've got all the login information.
But it's just Google content.
So far, my understanding is that yes, it's just Google. Although they had a partnership with Netflix and are trying to partner with other places. Mm. So you can watch Netflix. They had some sort of, I don't know, 3 months free on Netflix if you sign up or something like that. And it went so quickly that they're not giving that away anymore.
Oh,
there's so many people
too
interested.
Populated.
Yeah.
Too interested.
They're like, that deal's been canceled.
Okay, so it's sold out, and presumably they're planning on making more of these things.
Yeah, so Sunday they're releasing it into the stores. So,
all this was just like electronic. That. Well, that says early adopters. It'll be interesting to see if we have Joe Public having already bought one of these things and been able to try it out. But if you're in that situation, or if you just have one of these at all, we will be looking to talk to you about that and about anything that we talk about today on the show. We're about to go to a break, but when we come back, do keep in mind that we do take calls at the bottom of the hour, and the phone number is 800-655-5877. It's Geek Speak here on KUSP, and on the next 7th Avenue project, composer Kevin Putz pulls off a difficult balancing act, writing heartfelt music that's emotionally accessible but artistically challenging. He talks to host Robert Pauly on the 7th Avenue Project about his life in music, winning the Pulitzer Prize in 2012, and his new flute concerto, which is premiering at this year's Cabrillo Festival of Contemporary Music. I'm looking forward to that interview and that festival. Anyway, so that's next time on the 7th Avenue Project, which you can hear Sundays at noon on KUSP 88.9 or at your convenience at KUSP.org. You're listening to Geek Speak on KUSP. I'm Bonnie Jean Primsch, broadcaster at large, filling in today for host Lyle Troxell. And with me in the air room is Lindsay Lonnie. Once again, at the bottom of the hour, we'll be taking your calls about anything we've talked about today or will talk about today. And the number is 800-655-5877. And by the way, thanks to Rick Philman for fielding those calls for us. But first, you've been doing a bit of research in bionic fashion, Lindsay. Quite a few things happening.
Right. Bionic fashion. It sounds so exciting.
It does.
I can't wait to hear that noise when I'm running. Exactly. The bionic woman. I love her name.
Yeah, so good.
So wearable tech that will turn man into machine by 2015 is the whole theme of this article that I found. And I don't know if that's actually accurate. This is more of a fashion industry
thing. They have to have
the
headline to get you to read it. Yeah.
So there's two major conferences on wearable technology that are taking place in the United States. There's Wear Tech Con in San Francisco and Wearable Tech Expo in New York City. And I just listed some highlights of things that I thought were really interesting, and I thought that you might find interesting too.
Okay, let's go over them.
They went over a sort of day in the life from waking to going to work to coming home and the things that you would wear and what the future is going to look like. So one of them is a dress that turns transparent when exposed to increasing electrical current, meaning a heartbeat.
Is that really for the ladies?
Exactly.
Wait a minute.
Hey, wait a minute.
They aren't just going to give up on that X-ray vision thing, are they?
No, they're not. That's exactly right.
They are going to figure that out.
X-ray glasses? No. X-ray dress.
Just
why
X-ray
not?
X-ray dress, yeah. Of course, she's going to wear it, too.
Oh, yeah.
Who's going to wear that?
Not me. It's like a nightmare. They're talking about how cool this is. And yeah, the pictures look cool. You know, I'll post the link up there. But yeah. If your heart rate increases, it increases the electrical current. And then as your heart rate increases, the dress becomes more and more transparent.
Right. So that's like permission, right? Go ahead and look.
Exactly.
Because I'm apparently excited.
Because you can control your heart rate.
Yeah. My heart's beating because I'm excited about you, not because I'm afraid of you.
Right. Exactly. So it sounds like a nightmare to me and not a dream.
What?
Because, you know, it's like that classic dream where you're public speaking or whatever, talking in front of a crowd and your heart rate goes through the roof and then suddenly you're naked. I'm like, no.
This is a dress for intimate encounters and those who are comfortable in those professions.
Exactly. You know, special parties or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
So there's also the Lark Pro.
The porn industry does lead technology, doesn't it?
Seriously. The pioneers come out of, you know, certain demands, but then, you know, we can find other applications for things, so that's fine. The Lark Pro wrist alarm is what I was mentioning earlier. It's sort of like the band that you can tie in with setting an alarm for waking that won't wake your partner up. So this ties into that. Lark Pro is the one that they put into this particular article. And then we were also talking about this earlier, you and I, a UV reader that checks your glucose levels. So you could have a tattoo or beneath your skin have this a film layer implanted and then run it under a UV light before you have your breakfast, and it would tell you what your glucose levels are. So then you could use your optical glasses and look in your pantry, and it would determine based on your glucose levels which cereal you should eat.
Okay, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and based on whatever.
Because if your blood sugar's low, you're not thinking as clearly and might not put the right thing into your body.
It's true. You just want sugar at that point.
Yeah.
So, yes, it will tell you, you know, try the muesli or whatever and eat this much of it.
Okay, glass. I'll try the muesli.
Right. Exactly. And so, you know, you can evaluate your pantry and what's in your fridge, and it will tell you what to have for breakfast. And then the utensils that you use to eat will monitor your food intake and how quickly you're eating and tell you to slow down so that you don't have a sugar spike. And also, if you're on a particular diet, you can get your glasses and your spoon. You know, this is all theoretical stuff. And there are prototypes of these kinds of things out there in various shapes and forms. But, you know, this is the day in the life of the fantasy fashion. And then this is one that I really liked. It's a fashion collar that you put on before you go out on your bike so that you can go to work instead of wearing a bike helmet. And the collar will detect if you're in an accident and turn into a helmet instantly.
What? Wait a minute. How does a collar turn into a helmet?
I don't know. Theoretical. But apparently there's some sort of...
Is it just a really fast 3D printer?
Yes, exactly. the color is not that attractive.
No.
It's, you know,
it's a little clunky, yeah. I imagine. So yeah. It's like a pop-up helmet?
Yes, it's a pop-up helmet.
Oh.
And it's to preserve your hairstyle so that you don't have to wear a helmet and have helmet hair when you go to work. You know, something I'm always concerned about with my beehive.
Yeah, exactly. I can't get this thing under a helmet.
I know. And then, you know, later you can go for your run and your shirt will keep track of, you know, your perspiration level, mm-hmm. your heart rate, and give you feedback, and also give feedback to your mobile app that says how much fat you're burning, you know, whether you've met your goals for the day, different things like that. And if you haven't, then when you're on your way home from work and pedaling away, it'll say, you know, congratulations, you met your goal for today for burning fat. And then there's a collar that you can wear with little lights on it. Mm-hmm. And as the day goes by, little LEDs light up so that by the end of the day, if you meet your goals, they all light up. So you have a full collar of
Yay.
LED lights.
And everyone can see and cheer you on.
Exactly.
Or chide you.
Right. As it may be.
Yeah.
But then when you're home and, you know, your house is dirty, you can put these vacuum shoes on and walk around your house and clean your floor with vacuum shoes.
Why would I take that fun away from the Roomba?
Right. Right. The Roomba, the efficient, functional Roomba.
I have often employed the damp rag and just dragging it around the spill on
right,
the floor.
With your foot.
Yeah. I have done foot mopping.
Foot mopping,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah. But well, I have not done foot vacuuming.
Right. But this would be a fashionable shoe, I'm sure.
I'm sure it would be. It wouldn't look orthopedic in the least.
No.
Where definitely. Does all the dirt go, though?
That's a great question. Into the sole of the shoe? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it gets beamed somewhere. No, beamed. I don't know.
Just, what they do is they take all that matter and then they transmit it to the collar and they recycle it and it becomes the helmet.
See, that's...
I'm pretty sure that's
how
that
thinking.
Works.
You're thinking. Yeah. You are thinking.
To recycle the materials.
That's. I don't know if this is better, you know, than the duct tape shoe vacuum method. Have you seen that?
No, but that makes sense.
Yeah. You just put duct tape on your shoes backwards
in
and
a
walk
loop.
Around your house.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and then when you're done, you just slip it off the front of your shoe
That's
and you're
great.
Done cleaning your house.
It's like the foot lint roll up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My dad always said, you know, you can do anything with duct tape.
Low tech still applies here on
exactly.
Geek Speak. Absolutely. Anything else in bionic fashion?
That's it.
You know, as you were mentioning that you had some items in bionic fashion, it made me think of this thing I saw on Boing Boing, which is my primary tech source.
Always fun.
For flexible, interactive electronic skin.
Ooh.
Which and they've got sort of a sample, like a prototype that's 16 by 16 pixels on a film on sort of like a rubber base, and each pixel is outfitted with a transistor. There's an LED, which is apparently organic. I'm not sure what that means.
Yeah.
And there's also a pressure sensor in there so that if you touch it at any given place, the longer you touch it, it glows brighter and brighter.
Huh.
And apparently they originally had this in mind for robots, so robots can be more human and have more of like a sense of touch,
right.
Which can help for more sort of delicate picking up and things like that. But it would also be useful for, I've got an owie, I'm going to put the skin on here, or... Hmm. Things like that. They also had it in mind for, you know, making more things into interactive consumer devices,
uh-huh.
you know, wallpaper or something that can be used as an interactive screen. You can touch it and order things online and so.
Okay, got it.
We have to think about the buying things first. The buying and the porn, that's
make it
first priority.
I can just imagine, you know, like going to push a door open and like leaving a handprint, like a lit up handprint there, or,
yeah.
you know, like something decorative wallpaper or something, you know.
Yeah.
Since we were talking about fashion earlier, that's where my mind is going now.
Oh, so you could, yeah, hands on the dress.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. We can find out who's handsy. hey, we'd love to talk to you. The phone number's here is 800-655-5877. As Lindsay and I are talking about things on Geek Speak today, we'd love to hear from you. In particular, Lindsay has a request out if you know about the, what's it called?
Chromecast.
The Chromecast dongle. Mm-hmm. Is it something you're using? How are you using it? Is it something you're interested in? How would you use it?
Mm-hmm.
But really anything at all you want to talk about, give us a call, 800-655-5877.
You went a little coffee talk there for a second.
I did. Well, sometimes it's hard to say the word give us a call without kind of getting into it.
Yep.
You know?
I can see the inclination.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
privacy being a concern.
Yeah.
There's something that Pinterest is doing.
Yeah. So Pinterest is now on board with the same thing that Twitter did previously, mm-hmm. with support for the do not track privacy feature, where, you know, I've got a Pinterest thing and, you know, I didn't really think much about it. But apparently they, if you go to a website and it has that pin it button and you are browsing around the internet, Pinterest can track the websites you've been to that had the pin it button on it.
Okay, so that's a little bit like how Facebook does that.
Right. Yeah. And so then, you know, let's say you're looking at party websites because you're thinking about throwing a party, then when you go to Pinterest, it will recommend pages for you to like and
even
boards
if you,
for you to like.
Whether or not you've actually clicked on the pin button, just the existence of the pin button means that Pinterest is keep track. Okay.
And I didn't know that before, but that's what they're doing. And so this past Friday, they said, you know, we're totally concerned about people's privacy. We'll want to give them whatever they want. Mm-hmm. You know, we assume that they want us to give them relevant recommendations about what to like. But, you know, in case they want privacy with that, you can just go turn this off in your preferences.
I just had a flash, Lonnie, that privacy might be the new green.
Oh, yeah.
And instead of businesses greenwashing themselves, they might privacy wash themselves. I wonder what color that would be.
Right. They're just going to start installing a button. Hey, increase my privacy. And
yeah.
It doesn't really
it doesn't
do anything.
Do anything. Or they're going to talk about something they do anyway.
Right.
And then sort of cast it in the sort of, it's for your privacy light so that they can gain more
Smart
points.
Smart marketing people will be all over that.
So that's something that Pinterest is up to is... And it may be, Ernest, it may not be privacy washing. I didn't want to pin that on Pinterest necessarily.
Yeah, yeah. No, not
that. But they're taking advantage of the going concern.
Yes, but now you have the option to do not track your browsing stuff. So
yeah.
I'm probably going to go turn that on just because it makes me feel good.
Yeah. Is there a reason not to? I guess that's the... Well, point, counterpoint. So in some ways, businesses and companies are getting more interested in privacy, but also the search is on to invade yours in a very creepy way. And I saw a headline about this, but I didn't read up, but apparently you have, about false memories being inserted into mice.
Yes.
Who's so, next?
The brain fascinates me, you know, that it's one of the frontiers right now. We're still learning about it.
Yeah.
But I don't know how much you know about, you know, neurons firing and, you know, electricity is memory. And, you know, you've got one thing that fires next to something else and it's called spreading activation. And so if you've got one memory that fires, but it was stored next to another memory, that you'll often have another random memory, even though they're unrelated because they're those neurons are next to each other.
Oh, that's what's going on there. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you're like, wait, well, I haven't thought about that in forever. It's because something next to it was triggered and the electricity spread. And,
okay.
So that's somewhat related to how they're doing this memory shuffling with mice. So scientists at the Riken MIT Center for Neural Circuit Genetics, which sounds super fun. I've got to go spend some more time on their site.
Yeah.
They managed to implant artificial memories in mice. In essence, the researchers got mice to believe that they had been shocked in one place, where actually they had been shocked in another place and not shocked in that location. So they used a technique called optogenetics. Neurons are modified to respond to light.
Mm-hmm.
So in the way that your neurons respond to electricity, they use light to trigger those neurons.
Okay.
And I don't remember exactly how they go through that. And, you know, you can look it up on the website, but optogenetics.
Optogenetics. They're using optogenetics, basically swapping out electricity signals for light signals.
Right. And so they put the mice in one environment and then identified and labeled hippocampus cells in the mice brains that were forming memories of the location.
Where they were.
Right. So they use the scan. They say, you know, all this stuff is firing in the hippocampus. So this is where the memory is located for this specific location in that mouse's brain.
Okay.
And then a day later, the mice were shocked in a different environment while the same cells that the previous memory was being stored, they were shocked in a new environment, but those other cells were stimulated.
So did it make the mouse feel that it had been shocked in the previous day's environment?
And that's what they were trying to figure out. And it looks like that's what worked, because they put the mice back into the previous environment where they were not shocked, and they froze in fear in the same way they would in an environment where
they
had been
shocked.
And so they're figuring that the way mouse brains, I don't know, that this kind of stuff could eventually work for human type thinking, because mouse thinking or the way their brains operate is very similar. it just creeps me out a little bit. You know, it's that whole yeah. Men in Black, like, flash the light. Here, you know, like this happened there, this happened there.
It's very Clockwork Orangey.
Yeah. Your brain does this kind of stuff all the time to you, sabotaging you, by the way. Like, the way things fire, sometimes your brain will remember that something happened somewhere that it didn't, and things like that. Memory is an interesting thing to study.
It's pretty fluid, as far as I can tell, and mutable, and it changes over time. And as you tell yourself a story of what happened, that becomes what your memory is. And
yeah,
I think many of us have the experience of a family story about our early childhood that we sort of swap out as a memory.
Yeah.
Because we've told the story so much, or it's been so much part of there was a Radiolab episode about that also. I think it was Radiolab. Maybe it was at This American Life. But it was Robert Krulwich anyway, telling a story about his wife seeing Jackie O across the street, and he had remembered it as he had seen her.
Oh, yeah.
But it was really the missus.
Yep. I see that all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, people telling stories and thinking it was theirs, but they heard it somewhere else. And yeah, the brain is kind of funny that way. So now they're figuring out ways to manipulate that.
How to manipulate that thing that already happens.
Exactly.
Fun times ahead, gang.
Well, I mean, you know, the good thing that this could be potentially used for.
Yeah, let's you know, give me a good spin on this, please.
Have you heard, like, I don't know if it's good or not, but there's people suffering from post-traumatic stress.
Sure.
And people who, you know, something severely traumatic happens to them and then they can't seem to heal from the emotional wound because the way your brain works is electricity will take the path of least resistance. And the more you concentrate on a particular thought or memory, the more, by default, the electricity goes
there. Yeah.
And you kind of can remap your brain by thinking, like, you know, when that bad thought comes up, you can kind of, like, cognitive behavioral therapy is all about rewiring and making the other pathways wider and making that one, that path grow over so it doesn't go there by default. But
so
this
you
could speed that up, maybe.
Yeah, maybe you could find a place in the brain that gets activated when something especially nice is happening and then map that into place where trauma happened.
Right, and it would reroute the, you know, electric circuit or whatever to the good memory.
Except that could also make it possible if you're like, I'm fine being in this torture chamber. Let me back in there.
Yeah. And have you seen that movie? What is that? Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Yeah.
It reminds me of that, where they have their memories erased of their bad relationships, and then they keep going back to the bad relationship because they didn't learn the lessons or whatever.
Hey, should we take a call? What do you think?
Sure.
We've got a minute before we need to go to our break. We're hearing now from Christoph in Santa Cruz, who is looking for a webcam. Are you there, Christoph?
I am, yes.
Okay, well, go ahead and ask your question.
So I am trying to find, my mother has what she refers to as an antique computer. It's an old eMac, and she's got the operating system is an OS X 10.39, and I'm trying to find a webcam so that we can do Skype with her because she has a new little granddaughter to be able to spend a little more time with, and her dinosaur computer doesn't seem to offer a lot of options for the webcam. Hmm. Like a, you know, one that we could hook up to it.
Okay.
So I'm wondering if you know of a particular one I could look into, and or if it's possible to upgrade her system, because it seems like once you get to 10.4 and above, then there's some possibilities.
Well, my first instinct would be to check on eBay. To see if there's something older that you can grab from a trusted seller. You know, I wish one of the guys was here because they're all Mac guys and I have a PC, so I'm not going to be a huge amount of help for
this
upgrading.
This is exclusively a ThinkPad version of GeekSpeak.
Right. But what I have seen is that, at least in my family, they've turned to using smartphones. So I don't know if she has a phone or if you're thinking...
Not of the smartphone era.
Got it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
we are, but she is not, so.
It sounds like either way you might be looking at a different device that can take in video and output video, because I have heard that too, that those early Macs just don't have a lot of interfaceability for stuff.
Doesn't, you know, so many of the new programs just require more sophisticated operating system or more advanced operating system than what her computer has, so.
Yeah.
There's
Well, I will definitely continue to peruse the internet and see if anything appears.
And did you have a last thought about that, Lindsay?
Well, there's a website called MACAM, Macam, that has a lot of information about what versions of cameras are supported with what versions of Mac operating systems. So they may be able to tell you which things are or are not supported with which OS X version.
M-A-C-A-N.
Yeah, I've heard of that site, so I will definitely check it out and see.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Christoph, for your call, and good luck.
Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. We also had an off-air comment from Christian in Seaside, who had something for us about Chromecast. Christian says Google is trying to get people to use to operating their phone on larger screen to maybe do away with laptops, and the mobile device becomes the computer.
Interesting.
So is that a way for them to be able to get into hardware without having to provide hardware?
You know, that's interesting because they've been kind of pushing the Nexus 7 as, you know, the way to have something in your living room that you can control all your media. Mm-hmm. I haven't tried it. I can't advocate one way or another. But I've been trying to think where the future is going with this, and that's interesting to me because I think the, you know, my personal vision of the long-term future is, you know, that you'll have your phone and that mm-hmm. there will be versions of monitors and TVs everywhere you go, whether it's like the walls with the skin or whatever, and that, you know, an easy way like this to mm-hmm. connect to everything so that wherever you are, you can see your content. So maybe that's what they're working towards. That's an interesting perspective.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're going to go on a quick break here, and we'll be back, including talking to other people who've got questions on the phone and a little bit more of geek news. So stay tuned. It's Geek Speak here on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP 88.9. Lindsay, by the way, hello, everyone. It's Bonnie Jean Primsch, broadcaster at large, filling in for host Lyle Troxell on Geek Speak. And here in the air room with me is Lindsay Lani, a systems analyst, a bunch of other things, mm-hmm. a bona fide geek, basically. And we've been taking your calls and talking about what's been happening in geek news in the past week or so. We had a call from Bob in Watsonville who wanted to answer off air, if possible. He's having problems with Firefox, the browser Firefox, some sort of a mail certification problem. Sometimes he gets a blank screen. He tries other browsers. Do you know something about that?
Well, my guess would be, and with the mail certificate thing, I'm not really sure. I would have to get more information. Hopefully he'll email some details in. But with Firefox, sometimes you need to install chain certificates or root certificates if you're trying to visit an SSL site. So one thing would be upgrade Firefox and make sure that you're on the most recent software version. Two, if you've got some sort of spyware on your machine, it can cause that kind of weird behavior. Mm-hmm. So I would install something like Spybot Search and Destroy and let it clean out your cache and your cookies and make sure. I usually use also something that prevents those things from being written. Spyware Blaster is another free one where you can put that down and it keeps the newer ones from being written as long as you keep it updated. Mm-hmm. So sometimes if I upgrade, I run a couple of those things and I go back to the site I was trying to reach, then everything seems fine magically. The thing with the certificates is if you go to a secure site that has not installed the appropriate root chain certificate for their SSL, then you'll get weird pop-up warnings saying, hey, this site isn't who they say they are, et cetera, et cetera. But it's not your classic, whoa, you know, warning, don't go here. It's something a little more vague than that. And you can install certificates in Firefox by looking up the certificate information and manually installing it. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of information out on the internet about how to do that. But usually, you know, me being who I am, I usually contact the site owner and tell them, hey, I'm trying to access your site with this particular browser and I'm getting this error. You need to upgrade your chain certificate on your web server. Mm. And then if they upgrade that, then nobody will get errors when they go to that site.
That just helps everybody.
Exactly.
Yeah. Thanks for thinking of the team, Lonnie.
Right.
So you can check those things out. And if you're still getting problems, of course, you can write us at geeks@geekspeak.org. And the whole panoply of geeks can put their minds on your problem. If you have other questions or things you want to mention about what you've heard on the show today, give us a call. We've got about 15 minutes left of the show, and you can call us at 800-655-5877. So back to the news. A few other things that you had done some research in this week.
Have you heard about Tesla's Supercharger Partner Program?
No, what is that? First of all, Tesla, the electric car company, they're going to change the way we drive around.
Right, exactly.
Elon Musk, et cetera, et cetera.
You know, they were the one that has survived and showed up ahead of the pack as far as the electric car companies, you know, that came out around the same time. And I don't know if you've started seeing them on the road. I saw a couple of them in Palo Alto, you know, back in the day, those early
adopter
people.
We can start up a new version of car tag.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm a fan. You know, I'd love to have one if I was willing to pay that much for a car. And maybe in a few years when there's used ones around, I'll
there
grab
we go.
One. We'll
see. That's my dream of the Prius, by the way. I'm going to get me a used one at some point.
Woohoo.
Yay. So what's the supercharger business? What's all that?
So what Tesla is doing is building a nationwide network of supercharger stations in the U.S. to help give its growing fleet of consumer vehicles the power they need to conquer the nation's highways. Exactly.
That doesn't sound evil.
Conquering.
Yeah. Man language there. So so partnering with other people who provide gas and things so they can also people plug in?
They are looking for people that have parking lots, essentially, that have space.
So get it out of the gas station idea.
Right.
And into the parking lot idea.
Right. So if a prospective partner has four to five minimum parking spaces available, or, you know, or more, of course, plus around 200 to 600 square feet for the superchargers and the equipment involved with doing the car charging, then Tesla will cover all costs for installing and maintaining the supercharger station. And that's, you know, unlimited maintenance and stuff like that. So it's almost like, you know, leasing a spot. And what they get in return is you can say you have a Tesla charging station and attract, you know, these Tesla owners to your businesses. And
those guys
like
know
that.
How to spend money.
Right.
So it's kind of like Zipcar, but different.
Right.
Right. Zipcar partnering with parking lots to be able to park some of their sort of cooperatively owned cars. How would you describe Zipcar? It's a way to sort of just use a car for when you need
loaner.
It and not have to own one. Yeah.
The
loaner system for cars. And so you're seeing that more and more, companies like that having spots in parking lots around the area. And so this would be like that, but with a way to charge it up while you're parking and doing your thing.
Exactly. So, you know, I'm going to make sure to raise my front yard and turn it into a bunch of parking. No, just kidding. That's a little
get
against
that sweet,
policy.
Sweet Tesla
don't
money.
Don't do that.
Don't do that. Yeah, no. It's like pre-existing parking lots, please. Okay.
Yep.
And are people taking them up on this?
I'm not sure yet. I'm assuming
brand
they
program.
Will, but the program is out.
Okay. Stay tuned. You know, and on the subject of potentially...
Let me tell you, can I give you one of my geek bit things?
Yeah.
Are you interested in hearing about this?
We're always interested in geek bits.
Okay.
Ironically, on the show, it is an audio show, but we love telling you about stuff that you just have to see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the kite patch. You know, I was laughing last night, you know, to myself, that we should rename this section the Kickstarter and Indiegogo section.
Right, because it's always like some sort of fundraiser, like a scheme for a thing that's a prototype that they want money to produce.
Exactly.
For many people.
Yeah, okay. So the kite patch. I thought this one was kind of neat. It's not necessarily geeky per se, unless you're a chemist or, you know, whatever, but mosquitoes detect clouds of the CO2 that we exhale. And that's how they find us from
a
distance.
Is that it? I thought, because we always say, like, I must taste good or I smell
right.
good. But it's really
so
just
sweet.
How much we're exhaling.
It's your CO2 that you exhale. They can detect the cloud of that from really far away.
Okay.
They can also detect different light spectrum and heat spectrum when they get close up. So by the time that they're close enough to see you, it's kind of too late. But it's attracting them from afar with the CO2. So you get a bunch of people together talking and breathing, and then it's like a big dinner bell. You know, you're ringing from far away.
Yeah, come get it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the kite patch is like number one on Indiegogo at the moment. But you could stick this patch to your shirt, and it would act like an invisibility cloak. And it uses safe, non-toxic compounds, which they don't list what they are.
I'm sure they're safe.
Yeah, safe, non-toxic compounds. And it affects the mosquito's ability to detect CO2 somehow. And so it's like cloaking yourself.
Oh.
But of course, once they're close, they can use their eyesight. But they're talking about using this in places like Uganda and places where, you know, you've got some third world area or a big jungle and there's a lot of malaria around. So you could, you know, potentially save lives.
But you know, everyone in the group would have to wear the kite patch. Otherwise, there'd be enough other people who don't have it on where they go like, well, I'm coming anyway. I heard the dinner bell.
Yeah. Exactly. Mm. So if you have enough people, I don't know how much one patch covers, you know, real estate wise.
Yeah.
You know, if you stick together and you have one patch, like how many people can
like
you have?
It's like a really big umbrella.
Right.
And why do they call it a kite patch?
I am guessing because it looks like a tiny flat kite. I'm not totally sure.
So it's a diamond of paper.
Yes, exactly. Colored paper.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
It doesn't float.
Well, you know, anything to keep the mosquitoes away, I'm all about.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. Not a fan.
Hey, we've got some minutes left of the show. You want to ask us something? 800-655-5877. Rick Filmon's taking your calls and fielding them and making sure we know that you're there and what you want to talk about. So go ahead and give us a call. 800-655-5877. It's the lady version of Geek Speak with Lindsay Lonnie and Bonnie Jean Primsch. Should we talk about that other geek bit you've got there?
Yeah, let's do that.
What is the NFC ring?
So, near field communication. There's a whole branch of people that are really into this, and it's sort of a way of
near field communication. So it's sort of remote but within short distances.
Right.
Okay.
So the NFC ring is another. It's on Kickstarter. And it can be used to unlock doors, unlock your mobile phone. It's a ring you wear on your finger. Transfer information and link people is what they say. So you wear it on your finger. You don't have to do updates. It doesn't require charging or power. And there's just, just put it on your finger.
The finger is the energy.
Right.
Right. It gets something from you.
Right. Or the sun. I have no idea. But yeah.
Okay. They don't. We don't know.
The page is pretty elaborate and they've got a lot of really cool information on there.
Okay. So links at geekspeak.org.
But when you take your phone out of your pocket, like you could slide your hand under your phone and it would just unlock it for you. So you don't have to swipe, enter your number, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And you know how they have the thing with phones where you can bump phones and exchange information
right.
and stuff like that. Yeah. Like you could just be near somebody with this ring and supposedly you could turn the ring. There's different stuff on one side or the other of the ring and you could turn the ring and the other person could turn the ring and then you could exchange some information that way or,
This is going to be comedy gold.
And what if you could, get near your car and unlock the door automatically when you come near your car
right.
and then you come near your front door and it unlocks automatically,
yeah.
Different things like that. But it's basically for, unlocking things. But we'll see.
Because if you can use it to sort of interact with your phone, I could see how, the ring, my rings sort of slide around all the time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You could accidentally undo the wrong thing.
Yeah, I'm wondering about that, too.
The different era of purse dialing is coming our way.
Yeah, the first rounds, they sold out of all the initial stuff, but they still have plenty of stuff available. It's like $43 for the man's version of the ring, the basic version, and then they go up from there based on, functionality and fanciness. but it's a fun page to read. I think that, I don't know how
applicable.
If you're
a lady, you get to pay more just because more fashion.
Yeah. More bling on my ring, please. No.
Yeah, really. Huh. All right. So take that glass.
Right. Exactly.
Basically.
So there's, the video game War Machine. Have you heard about this new robot that they created?
No. Can you fill us in a little bit on just what that is?
Yeah, let me take a look at this.
Okay.
So I'll also kind of put this up under the geek bit stuff because there's a picture that's pretty cool. It's a little bit sad in the beginning of the article. There is a little girl and her dad, and they used to play this Mech Warrior game, which is really popular online. You basically wear a robot outfit and battle other people on the battlefield.
Okay.
And she was 5 years old and got really good at it and started kicking the booties of a bunch of older people and became popular at playing this game.
That's kind of the Japanese dream, right? There's some gifted child that has to save the world.
Right.
Yeah.
So everyone knew all along that she was battling brain cancer. She lost her battle, and all the people in the game had rallied around her family and come together and asked the game developers to develop a special mech robot for her.
Oh.
So the game developers developed this. Her favorite robot was the Jenner. Her favorite mech warrior, I shouldn't say robot, was the Jenner version. And so they made this particular mech warrior to honor her, and it has a purple unicorn painted on the front, some stickers on the side and things like that.
Yeah.
And they started selling this robot for $10, and all the purchases go to charity.
So it's a skin or whatever within the game that you can purchase and play from. You could play from this particular version of the robot, honor her, make a little money for cancer charity.
Yep. They've got $54,000 so far. So if anyone out there is gaming and online in their Mech Warrior, go grab up the Jenner. They call it the Sarah's Jenner.
Jenner.
Yeah.
Okay. That's sort of sweet.
Yeah.
Of course, I always go to the dark place.
Right. I know. I'm like, don't go there, Bonnie. Don't go. Stay with me.
But, that's the more of the washing. I always wonder, Where is the line between a company doing good for something and wearing a cloak of doing good so that more people pay attention? You saw a big wave of that when the Supreme Court came down on the side in favor of people getting to continue being married in California and so on and so on.
Right.
That companies would win a lot of points, especially on the internet, for releasing commercials that had pro-same-sex marriage kind of messages and that sort of thing. And yeah. then there was a lot of buzz created about that company and that product, including people saying, wow, they're so supportive. I'm going to make sure and go out and buy that thing.
Right.
And I always wonder where the line is between a company's real desire to do some good in the world and you know, have a little bit of societal responsibility, and when they see dollar signs.
Yeah.
I just always do.
Here's my thing is, I don't care. Because what they're doing is reflecting what people want.
Yeah.
And if people want things that are good, yeah. then we're doing okay.
So, right. So to encourage that means that even if it's just a fashionable thing for a company to do, it still results in $54,000 for cancer research, for
right.
instance.
And, you know, I don't really think it's hurting, you know, I don't know if it's hurting anybody. I don't see that happening.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just glad that there is demand from the general public for something good to happen.
Right.
And I don't expect a company to be ethical.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Why pin that on them? Well, ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to another edition of Geek Speak here on KUSP. Thanks so much for listening. This is Geek Speak is a registered service mark of David Lawrence and is used with permission. Thanks again to Rick Philman for managing the phones, and thank you for listening. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at KUSP.org, and always you can find out more about this or any episode of Geek Speak on geekspeak.org.